99, Senator Peter Courtney. We want to begin opening remarks, and if mics are not on.
Mic's not on, John.
Are the microphones on? They are on.
They are on?
Yes, sir, they are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Peter Courtney, State Senator, District 17, as the committee knows, because I'm a member of this august committee, and I'm Salem-Keizer is my Senate district, and I'm here today to testify in support of SB 199, often referred to as Abandoned Baby Bill or Safe Recovery. And I'm joined by Debbie Ferris, who has come up from California at my request to discuss this issue with you, because there is no one in the country who has dealt more extensively with this issue, both in terms of developing legislation in the state of California, but also actually dealing with children who have died, the coroner's office, as well as individuals who have been sentenced to prison as a result of abandoning a baby and the baby dying. She's probably the leader in the country on this issue, and she has some interesting and riveting testimony to deliver. And what I'm going to do is, and I have to be the bad guy here to many of the witnesses. We've got a remarkable array of witnesses who have agreed to come down and to talk about this issue. I also want to thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a real glitch on this hearing today, as you know, and I went to the chair of Information and Management, Senator Vern Duncan, which his committee is going to start at 1, and to the chair of Judiciary, and asked him to put a meeting on today. And they agreed to do so, because I know, Senator Duncan, you're going to have to leave at 1. I'm on your committee. I can't join you. I think you understand that. Senator Metzger's on that committee. I don't know whether he's going to stay here or go there. So we do have that situation in front of us, and it's regrettable. But we had already scheduled the witnesses coming in, and the thing had been scheduled today for 2 weeks before we discovered it didn't work. I'm going to quickly tell you why I got involved in this, but then I want to stop and turn it over to allow Debbie Ferris to speak. I would ask all those in the back, and I hate to say this, but I have to. We've got a large number of witnesses, and I would hope that if individuals can limit their testimony, even though a lot of their testimony is extremely emotional and riveting and the kind of thing you really need to hear to understand the magnitude of the public policy we're talking about here. And this will be one of my more dramatic public hearings, I think, in my 9 sessions. And I'm just grateful to you, Mr. Chair, and to members of this committee, because this is a great judiciary committee, that you'd allow me this opportunity. All I can tell you is there was a recent situation in Salem that this bill would not cover, where a baby was abandoned in a dumpster in West Salem. And without going into the particulars, while this bill wouldn't cover it, I got thinking that's a pretty cruel situation. And I was aware that other babies have been abandoned, particularly in dumpsters or left out in the cold. They've been left in situations, let's be very frank about it, they could not survive. I mean, the babies just couldn't survive. But somewhere I heard about a situation where there was a program or an idea that maybe an individual in this incredibly desperate situation, if we could just get them in that critical time in their life, and as you're going to hear from Debbie Ferris, it only involves a few number of hours in a person's life where they're in this crisis situation so bad that they just go and do this. If we could only get them maybe just to leave at some place, just some place where the baby would have a chance to survive, that would be good public policy. And sure enough, I now go to the Debbie Ferris's of this world. There was a state in California, even Texas, and a community in Alabama, where they were saying, hospital, just take it to a hospital. Now, I'm generalizing here. Our bill says more than that. Just leave it and go. Just leave it and go. No questions asked. Now, I am generalizing, and I'm being oversimplified. Well, it's a difficult emotional concept when you first hear it, because you want to say anybody who does that ought to be prosecuted to the fullest of the law. I mean, that's the first instinct I think you have. But the problem is the baby's dying. The baby's dead. And sure, you put them in jail, but the baby's dead. And couldn't it be, if we could get them as upset to her, to just to leave the child in a situation where he could get the help, wouldn't that be a better way to go? The numbers are not great, but there is at least the numbers are great when you hear like California, and I don't mean to knock Debbie's state, but they're into the 40s and 50s there. But that's a huge state. We are less dramatic here. We're averaging, I think, 1 every 2 years or something of that effect. There's been a number that are being 1 or 2 every 2 years, something like that in Oregon. Texas has dramatic figures, as do some counties. Texas is a bigger state. And so I put together a small work group, District Attorneys Association, the great Josh Marquis, who's here today, the hospital people. I asked them to come. I asked the health division people to come, Virginia Vanderbilt and some others, a small group. It wasn't a big work group, as I was found out, and we started to work on this in the interim. Put together a bill. Continually, we introduced the bill. I think they're in front of you, Mr. Chair, as many as 4 amendments, because we continue to work this bill, trying to come up with something that people can accept, but will accomplish what we want. The bottom line, and after I say this, I will turn it over to Debbie Ferris, if you'll allow me to do so, Mr. Chair. The bottom line is to give that newborn, it's a newborn baby we're talking about, an opportunity to live. With that, Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me to do so, could I allow Debbie Ferris now to testify about her experiences and knowledge in this?
Just one brief admonition of the committee. We have a hand-engrossed version of the bill, which includes the 4 amendments that Senator Courtney spoke of. So as you're looking at the bill and reading it, read that -1 hand-engrossed bill as opposed to the other one. And Senator Courtney, I want to thank you for bringing the bill to us. And if you're ready, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I just want to say, first off, it's an honor for me to be here. I was born and raised in this great state, and so I still consider it home, even though I've been in California for 15 years. And to think of my state, my home state, of wanting to be a safety net for the babies that this bill is being written for means a great deal to me. About 4 years ago, I was in my kitchen, and I was making dinner. And I heard on the news a story about a newborn baby boy. This little baby boy was found in a pink duffel bag with the words Lifesaver on it. And his body was found in that duffel bag thrown down a road just alongside the freeway. And when I heard the story of that little boy, I just thought, how in the world can somebody be that desperate and that scared to do something like that? Being the mother of 3 children myself, all I could envision were remembering my babies when they were newborns. And that's the face that I kept in front of me for several days. I called the coroner's office. I asked them what is going to happen to this child. And they said they'd do an investigation. It would take about 30 days. After the end of that time, this child would be cremated, and his cremated remains would be put in a little cardboard box with just a number on it. And I thought, how can anybody come into this world and never be known? And if they are known, it's only by numbers. And so I asked the coroner's office if my family and I could have that child become a part of our family, and if we may be able to have the honor of burying that child. Well, I called on one child, and by the time they were ready to release that child to us, there was already another newborn baby found in a dumpster. We asked for him, too. They called me to tell me that they were going to release that child to us, both of those little boys to us, and we could have our service for them. And then they said, Mrs. Ferris, we also have the body of a little girl. She's about the age of 2, and we have tried in vain to find some family for her. Would you care for her, because we're getting the order to cremate her? And I knew at that point, when I had called for one child, and then there were 2, and then there were 3, I knew that this is something that happens, and I just wasn't sure if this was something that I could let my heart get involved in, because it hurts so much to think that somebody could just abandon children like this. But we did care for those 3 children on August 26th of 1996. And during the course of this last 5 years, we have buried the bodies of 44 children. I went to my state senator, and I asked him if he would help put the Garden of Angels out of providing this loving business or this loving service for these children. I want these children to be recovered alive instead of dead. And at that time, the state of Texas had just passed their new law. And I said, one state's already done it, can we do it? And so he went to work right away writing some legislation. And I'm very happy to say that there were some amendments made to the bill, but on September 28th, our governor signed that bill into law, which became an effective law on January 1st, and it has already saved the lives of 3 children. This law is called the Safe Arms for Newborns Law. It's Senate Bill 1368 in the state of California. But this law was designed for the woman who is pregnant, who has not told her family or friends, who has not picked up the phone and called the wonderful agencies, the crisis pregnancy agencies that are out there, all the people that want to help, or the adoption services. She's kept her pregnancy a secret, and then she's given birth in secret, and now she just wants to get rid of this child. And it's usually within the first 24 hours of that child's life that it's abandoned because she doesn't want to get caught with it. So that is the reason that our bill was written. It's to give this woman a better option, a more loving option that she can use. Instead of taking her child to a trash can or a dumpster, she'd have a safe place like a hospital emergency room. It's been mandated in the state of California that every hospital emergency room, public or private, can be a safe place for a child to be taken to. The mother will bring in her child, put her child in the arms of an employee there, and then the baby is given a coded bracelet, and the mother is given a copy of that coded bracelet. And also in the pack that the mother is given is a medical history and background information form, and also a Dear Mother letter thanking her for bringing her child to the hospital. It is our hope, and it's enclosed in an envelope that has the address of the hospital and a stamp on it, so it's our hope that this mother will take that baby or take that packet home and fill out that medical history information and put it back in the envelope and send it off to the hospital so that that child can then have some medical history that will follow it. That mother is also, in the state of California, given a 2-week cooling-off period, which will allow her to reconsider her decision. At that time, when the baby is brought into the hospital, for the first 2 weeks, the baby is put into an emergency foster care home. And if the mother doesn't come back within the first 2 weeks, then the baby will go into the official child welfare system and be adopted, go into an adoptive family. But she does have that option to reconsider her decision. So we're trying to work very hard in the state of California to think about all the things that might come up for making this a good law, a law that will help save the lives of children. And I will honestly tell you that I always said that in the beginning that if it saves the life of one child, it's been worth it. And to have it save the life of 3 children is worth it. And there's really not much that I can bring to you except for the children. And I really would like to tell you that when I go to a coroner's office and I pick up these babies, and I unwrap the plastic off of them, and I look into their faces, and I see these perfect little individuals that were just thrown away like trash, I cannot walk away from that and say, this is all we can do for you, is to give you a burial and a name. We have to do something to make it different for the children of the future.
Debbie, could you please tell the committee, you have visited the people in prison who've gone to prison for this. You need to, I want you to understand there's no profile here of individuals that do this. It's very strong. You know that. And also, you mentioned 24 hours. Would you describe what the coroner said in terms of, you said 24 but 72. I don't mean to lead the witness, but I think you need to know because she's actually visited some of the people, the young people who've gone to jail for this. Would you tell them what you found in terms of profile?
The mothers that we know about are just a small handful. Some of them are teenage moms. We just had an instance that happened about a month ago. A 14-year-old had a baby in her home, and the parents didn't know she was pregnant. She gave birth to the baby in bed. The baby was making noise. She suffocated the baby. she started to hemorrhage, and her parents took her in to the hospital emergency room wondering what was wrong with her, and the doctor said, you've just given birth, where's your baby? And so, you know, now there's a 14-year-old girl who's in juvenile hall that is always going to remember the face of this child that she strangled. I mean, I visit a young woman, she's 21 now, but a couple of years ago, she was an honor student at a college in Southern California. She came from a very close-knit family, very well-to-do family, and she became pregnant, and she, because she was so afraid she was going to disappoint her parents, and they might be ashamed of her, they might disown her, she was just so afraid, she just kept thinking about all this stuff that might happen. And when she gave birth to her baby, she strangled her and put her down a dump chute. That mother is now in prison for 5 years, and we write all the time to each other. I've been a couple of times to visit her. And I will be honest in telling you that I thought in visiting her, I was looking for the monster inside this woman that could do something like that. Because for me, I just couldn't imagine somebody being that scared and desperate and looking down into somebody's face and either throwing them away or strangling them to quiet them. I just couldn't imagine what kind of a woman could do that. And I have to tell you that this is a woman who is a tender-hearted young woman. And she has told me, you know, I am so sorry for what I've done, and I have to live with that forever. And she said, that's not me. She said, I made a terrible decision. She said, I'm always going to see the face of my baby forever. I'll never be able to get that out of my mind. So it's really difficult because there's really so many victims. The baby first and foremost, the mother, and then I look at the nucleus of the family that's around this mother and how they've been destroyed and what they've lost. So I just would ask you to please, please do put forth this bill, carry it through, make amendments, but make it work. Come together and say, we need to do this. We need to do it for our babies. And you may say that we may not have as big of a problem as California has. But I do have to tell you that some of these babies, the numbers that you have are maybe just the babies that are only found. You may have many more babies than you realize, and they're never found.
Question, Senator Duncan.
I just want to comment, because I do have to leave to go to the other meeting, but I just want to thank you for coming. It's very, very enlightening, and I just admire you for what you've done, and you've really given life to lots of people. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sorry, I have to leave. I'd like to hear the rest of the testimony.
Okay. Debbie, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Senator Courtney and I have kind of a long history in this body of dealing with issues like this since, I think, all the way back to 1989 and creation of multidisciplinary.
May I just say one more thing?
Yes, of course.
I know that everybody will always have questions. What about the mother? What about the father? What about this? What about that? But I would just ask you to please always remember, what about the baby?
The reason she's saying that, she held a conference yesterday, statewide conference, and groups are coming together like never before on this issue. And there are groups that are going to raise some concerns about the bill, I can tell you that. And there are issues in how do you notify the parents, adoptions, what about the child having a right to know who its parents are if you did save the baby later on, you know, because of the adoption issues. But the bottom line here is, and I hate to be so graphic, if the child's dead, all those things are irrelevant. And what she did, and she said, as I say, the coroner, they got a 72-hour period, you really have a person who's really messed up, and this has happened. She uses women, but I'll be frank with you, I've always used men. That is, there is a father that could be involved in this, too. She said mothers, but it could be the fathers. It's that situation. The final thing is, this is a daring type of bill. I want you to be honest. I want the committee to know this. She's talking hospitals. Our bill, as we presented it, and I'll be up front with you, it talks about fire stations, I believe, and police stations. I mean, it's more comprehensive. And I'm not trying to say that you may be afraid of that. You may want to go back and just make it narrow. I believe John Minnis, I'll tell you something, I trust John Minnis with a baby anytime because he's a cop, and he's a good cop, and they don't, and they know the right decisions, and our firefighters. So that was part of our bill. Sort of like Oregon likes to be the first or only, I was willing to look at our police and our fire. We put that in there, John, which is more than California did. So I want you to know that, this is California, but this is Oregon, the bill. Whether you want to do that or not, I don't know where you're coming from on that. I just felt I wanted to make a lot of options available to a person to know, just take it, here are the places you can take it. So I just wanted to be upfront with you. If you're starting to wonder, well, Peter, this is California Hospital, you've got the world. I don't have the world, but I believe in you, John, and I believe in the firefighters to do this as well.
Well, what I was going to say was, there's been a long history in this building. There's been a long history in this building since at least 1989, where this legislature created multidisciplinary teams.
Right.
The design was that every district attorney in the state of Oregon would have some kind of a multidisciplinary team to investigate child abuse, which from time to time includes child fatalities. There was the creation of the CAMI Fund, the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Account in 1993 that put money to that, which created the incentive to create the programs that are viable and working and functioning. 1991, I believe, we created a state technical assistance team to assist various counties and law enforcement agencies in the investigation of various kinds of abuse, including child fatalities. We also have child fatality review teams around the state and I wanted to kind of alert people that in the current budget environment we have in Oregon, that child fatality review program is no more. It's been lined out, $1.1 million. So when we talk about issues like this, I think it's extremely important. One of the conferences that I attended on child fatalities back in Missouri, I believe in 1993 or 94, indicated that they had discovered that there were children who were part of a family who had gone across state lines, come back with one last child, and nobody knew the difference. So when you have, and it's kind of an interesting phenomenon, when you talk about finding a child that's 2 years old and the coroner medical examiner could not identify a parent, that's no joke. It happens in this country. You get to missing persons, just general statistic, 300,000 people in the United States each year are reported missing. Of that, roughly 3% are never, ever reported or found again, ever, and that includes children. So you think about that, start talking about the impact of missing literally that many people from our population in the United States as it grows. It's a phenomenal number of individuals. So I appreciate what you've had to say today. Appreciate this effort because it does go to the heart of trying to develop a compassionate system for persons who find themselves in a situation like this. So, Senator Brady.
Chairman, I also want to thank you for coming. Your testimony was very moving. You talked about the California bill and that three children have been turned in under that bill. Have there been any other children who have been found dead since that bill went into effect?
Unfortunately, yes. Last week, a little boy was found in an alley, a newborn baby boy. But I believe, really, if this is a wonderful bill and pass it, but you also have to educate that it is out there. I think if that's the whole key to making this bill work. We've put together public service announcements in both English and Spanish for radio and television. They're not out airing yet. We hope to do that in the next couple of weeks. We've created posters. We are doing everything that we can to try to keep this from happening. And try. I go into schools and I speak at schools, and that's an awesome experience to do that. And that's where we need to start, because we need to start in our junior highs, our high schools, and even in our colleges, and making them aware of this issue and that there are other options if you find yourself in this position.
Chairman, if I could follow up, how are you get? Because I agree with you, the education seems like it would be crucial on this. Who is supporting this education? Who's paying for it?
Well, actually, for us, it's the kind-heartedness of individuals who believe the same way we do, that want to see this not happen to children anymore and want to be a part of saving lives, saving the lives of children. We are a nonprofit organization, and it's really because people have come together and said, what can we do to change this?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Debbie. Appreciate your testimony. We've got Bob Castagna who has to leave. I'll go ahead and call you up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your indulgence. For the record, I'm Bob Castagna, Director of the Oregon Catholic Conference. The Oregon Catholic Conference would like to go on record today in support of Senate Bill 199. I'm passing out to you a copy of Minnesota Law, Chapter 421 of their Minnesota Laws 2000. At the Summer State Catholic Conference Directors meeting this past July, we discussed this type legislation that was being offered and adopted in other states. And my counterpart from the state of Minnesota was particularly supportive of this legislation. In Minnesota, they have established what is called Safe Place for Newborns, and on the board of directors is a priest from the cathedral parish, and on the advisory committee is the Archbishop of Minneapolis. The Catholic Church and the Oregon Catholic Conference adopts its public policy positions based on a consistent ethic of life, in which the dignity and sanctity of human life is the cornerstone value and forms the framework on which the Church adopts its public policy issues. And that consistent ethic of life extends from conception until natural death. So you will see the Oregon Catholic Conference here on a whole range of issues this session, be they human service issues, be they life issues, economic justice, or social justice issues. We have discussed this bill with Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese. They were not prepared to testify today because they had some concerns, and we'll be seeking a meeting with the chief sponsor of the legislation to discuss those concerns to see if the committee would open itself up to some potential amendments. Their concerns in conversation related to the potential for seeking some identification of at least the health history and potential reaching out either from the parents later on or from the child to those parents. And one provision of the Minnesota law, which I would call to your attention, which I did not see reflected in the at least hand-engrossed amendments, is contained in the Section 1, Subdivision 1, Subsection B of the Minnesota law. The sentence that reads, the hospital may not inquire as to the identity of the mother of the person leaving the newborn or call the police, provided the newborn is unharmed when presented to the hospital. The hospital may ask the mother or the person leaving the newborn about the medical history of the mother or newborn, but the mother or the person leaving the newborn is not required to provide any information. The hospital may provide the mother or the person leaving the newborn with information about how to contact relevant social service agencies. We agree with the purpose of the bill, that the purpose of the bill is to save the lives of these infants, and that is a meritorious and worthy provision. We would also hope that the legislation would hold forth the possibility of at least inquiring at the time that the infant is handed over, so that any identifying information which the personnel receiving the baby may voluntarily receive from the parent would be able to be documented, so that for health history purposes as well as future family reunification purposes, even if that's 20 or 30 years down the line, that at least that possibility might exist if this information is voluntarily obtained. So the Oregon Catholic Conference thanks the members of the sponsoring group for this legislation. We do wish to go on record in support of it, but I think there is the possibility of at least engaging in some fine-tuning that we would place before the committee.
Questions? Bob, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your indulgence.
Grant Higginson and Kathy Ledesma, not sure how to pronounce it.
Chairman, as members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I'm the state health officer and acting administrator for the Oregon Health Division, Department of Human Services, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 199, which would provide places where newborns could be safely surrendered without fear of repercussions. Excuse me. As a state health officer, one of my roles is to be the co-chair of the statutorily mandated state child fatality review team, which Senator Menas already mentioned. Over the 12 years that I've been associated with that team, we have seen a number of tragic cases where the outcome might have been different if this bill had been in place. And the cases all follow pretty much the same pattern. There was a young woman who for one reason or another wanted to hide her pregnancy and was successful in doing that. But that young woman gave birth totally unattended and alone, no medical support, health care support by any means. And then at a time when there was severe stress, emotional turmoil, confusion, that woman tried to dispose of that child in a variety of ways, and ones that I can remember were placing the child in a paper bag, in a plastic bag in the closet. Another where the child was drowned in the bathtub where she had given birth. And another one where they had put the child in a dumpster, as you've heard is the case a number of times in California. The first time that I reviewed a case like this, I couldn't believe that it had happened, and even as a physician, questioned whether or not people really can hide their pregnancies through late term of pregnancy, and through discussions with the team, found out that indeed that is possible and does happen. The second and further times that we've reviewed cases like this, it did strike me that it would be a very, very simple and safe way to potentially avert cases like this if there was a place where, without any fear of repercussions, a woman could simply go and surrender that child. Senate Bill 199 does provide such a safe haven. Senate Bill 199 also provides for a public education campaign that actually would be the responsibility of the court.